We're not in Denver. We are broadcasting from the studio in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, but we have Bill Clinton right here. So let's, we got to hear this. We just got to hear this. Let's just bring it up right now.
And it came down to two remarkable Americans locked in a hard-fought contest right to the very end. That campaign generated so much heat, it increased global warming. Now, in the end, my candidate didn't win, but I'm really proud of the campaign she ran. I am proud that she never quit on the people she stood up for, on the changes she pushed for, on the future she wanted for all our children. And I'm grateful for the chance Chelsea and I had to go all over America to tell people about the person we know and love. Now, I am not so grateful for the chance to speak in the wake of Hillary's magnificent speech last night. But I'll do the best I can. Last night, Hillary told us in no uncertain terms that she is going to do everything she can to elect Barack Obama. That makes two of us. Actually, that makes 18 million of us. Because, like Hillary, I want all of you who supported her to vote for Barack Obama in November. And here's why. And I have the privilege of speaking here, thanks to you, from a perspective that no other American Democrat except President Carter can offer. Our nation is in trouble on two fronts. The American dream is under siege at home, and America's leadership in the world has been weakened. Middle-class and low-income Americans are hurting, with incomes declining, job losses, poverty and inequality rising, mortgage foreclosures and credit card debt increasing, health care coverage disappearing, and a very big spike in the cost of food, utilities, and gasoline. And our position in the world has been weakened by too much unilateralism and too little cooperation. By a perilous dependence on imported oil, by a refusal to lead on global warming, by a growing indebtedness and a dependence on foreign lenders, by a severely burdened military, by a backsliding on global nonproliferation and arms control agreements, and by a failure to consistently use the power of diplomacy, from the Middle East to Africa to Latin America to Central and Eastern Europe. Clearly, the job of the next president is to rebuild the American dream and to restore American leadership in the world. And here's what I have to say about that. Everything I learned in my 8 years as president, and in the work I have done since in America and across the globe, has convinced me that Barack Obama is the man for this job. He has a remarkable ability to inspire people, to raise our hopes and rally us to high purpose. He has the intelligence and curiosity every successful president needs. His policies on the economy, on taxes, on health care, on energy are far superior to the Republican alternatives. He has shown a clear grasp of foreign policy and national security challenges and a firm commitment to rebuild our badly strained military. His family heritage and his life experiences have given him a unique capacity to lead our increasingly diverse nation in an ever more interdependent world. The long, hard primary tested and strengthened him. And in his first presidential decision, the selection of a running mate, he hit it out of the park. With Joe Biden's experience and wisdom, supporting Barack Obama's proven understanding, instincts, and insight, America will have the national security leadership we need. And so, my fellow Democrats, I say to you, Barack Obama is ready to lead America and to restore American leadership in the world. Barack Obama is ready to honor the oath to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. Barack Obama is ready to be President of the United States. President, he will work for an America with more partners and fewer adversaries. He will rebuild our frayed alliances and revitalize the international institutions which help to share the cost of the world's problems and to leverage the power of our influence. He will put us back in the forefront of the world's fight against global warming and the fight to reduce nuclear, chemical, and biological weapons. He will continue and enhance our nation's commendable global leadership in an area in which I am deeply involved, the fight against AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria, including, and this is very important, a renewal of the battle against HIV and AIDS here at home. A President Obama will choose diplomacy first and military force as a last resort. But in a world troubled by terror, by trafficking in weapons, drugs, and people, by human rights abuses of the most awful kind, by other threats to our security, our interests, and our values, when he cannot convert adversaries into partners, he will stand up to them. Barack Obama also will not allow the world's problems to obscure its opportunities. Everywhere, in rich and poor countries alike, hardworking people need good jobs, secure, affordable health care, food and energy, quality education for their children, and economically beneficial ways to fight global warming. These challenges cry out for American ideas and American innovations. When Barack Obama unleashes them, America will save lives, win new allies, open new markets, and create wonderful new jobs for our own people. Most important of all, Barack Obama knows that America cannot be strong abroad unless we are first strong at home. People the world over have always been more impressed by the power of our example than by the example of our power.
Oh. I don't know that I can do any more. I really don't. What do you think I ought to do, Kathy? Come back and do some more of this? All right, this is the Molloy Program. Stay with us on Nova M Radio. Never before. I feel so good that I want you to know.
You're listening to Mike Molloy on Nova M Radio. Turn down your speakers. It'll be our secret.
All right, it's 22 past the hour, and no, we've made an executive decision here. We're not going to go back to coverage of Bill Clinton speaking. He's, you know, if you want to, go ahead, watch it on MSNBC or CNN or ABC, whatever. But he is, he's comparing the obvious right now, some of the record, at least the visible record of the 8 years he was in office to the visible record of the 8 years that, the Bush crime family has been operating. And I just don't think it's real necessary to go back and listen to this. Before I forget, I want you to do something if you are so inclined. A woman died today. She was 87 years old. Her name is Del Martin. Del Martin. I don't know how many people know who she is, but here's a website for you to go to, PamsHouseBlend.com. You know, like coffee, Pams, P-A-M-S, PamsHouseBlend.com. And just scroll down a little bit and read about Del Martin. She got married back in June, and I think it was in June when she got married, and she married her partner of 55 years, and she died today, 87 years old. So if you would, take a look, PamsHouseBlend.com, and read the story of Del Martin. All right, will you do that? Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. I was watching ABC News tonight and saw Charlie Gibson report on what happened to an ABC reporter who was taking pictures of senators and the Democratic Party's elite donors who were going into yet another off-limits party. For the hoi polloi, or for hoi polloi. I've been told you don't put the in front of hoi polloi, right, Kathy? It's hoi polloi. Am I pronouncing it right? I don't use words like that. I really don't. But anyway, a party that hoi polloi were barred from entering, of course, and there have been many of those. As a matter of fact, at the convention, ABC had the audacity tonight to train a camera on the skyboxes, I guess that's what you'd call them, and bring in a close enough shot so you could see how the rich Democrats, the ones that would never even consider funding liberal talk radio, not as somebody held a bank book to their throats, but how they party. Because the rich Democrats, and this gets us back to what we've been talking about this week, that has really cost me a lot of listeners. But you know what? I don't give a goddamn. I really don't. You people who have sent me these emails and called me the names you've called me about a sexist and all this other stuff and a racist and all this, kiss my ass, okay? Plain and simple. Plain and simple. If that's the way you feel, get out of here. I don't care. I don't care if you listen or not. As a matter of fact, I wish you go away. I'm sick of your emails. I'm sick of you missing the point. I'm tired of it. So take your whiny ass attitude and go away. Really, you'd be much better off listening to someone like Ed Schultz. There you go. Go listen to Ed. He'll provide you a nice home. But or Alan Combs. There's another good one. But just do me a favor, because you know I blocked about 50 of you this week. No more emails from you. I'm sick of it. Really sick of it. But there are the Democrats, the elite Democrats, doing the same thing the elite Republicans do. Pissing all over the people who are supposed to be, the backbone of the Democratic Party. The working class, the working poor, the minorities, gay, lesbian, straight, and trans, gay, lesbian, transgendered, bisexual, I mean, just Americans. Being kicked around again, this time by the Democrats. I am so sick of this, I could scream. We are posting at MikeMalloy.com in the section of where we do the topics, the links, several articles of how Americans are being treated in Denver. It's a veritable police state there. It really is. I got more to say about this when I come back, but stay with us. This is the Malloy Program on Nova M Radio.
Against the law, I am perfectly comfortable fighting the world. If you're perfectly comfortable with all that's been done, gaze at your daughters and gaze at your sons. Ask yourself this question. No one left the nature back.
Ready for Radical Talk Radio? Make mine Mike Malloy on Nova M.
26 before the hour. So I got an email from Jack in Oakland, California, who sent me a bunch of links. The ABC reporter, the video, it was on ABC News tonight. There's a little bit more video, who was roughed up and arrested in Denver because he was taking pictures of senators and the big money donors going into yet another one of these 1,200 or 1,500 parties, that most of which were, a good percentage of which were reserved only for the big dogs. And what is this Pelosi's 100? Have you heard about that? These are people who have really come up with the big bucks. They get into Pelosi's inner circle. I guess these are the people who provide the business plan, as Howard Dean puts it, the money for the business plan, or how to do the business of winning an election. And they're the ones that put up lots and lots and lots of money. You know, and you wonder why impeachment's off the table. Come on, people. You know, one of the themes running through the emails I've gotten from people this week who really have taken me to task is, you know, I'm turning on the Democrats and advocating McCain. And all I can say to anyone who sends me a letter that has that kind of a theme to it, you know, you must be out of your mind. Either that or your mama never taught you how to listen to somebody. That's absolutely not what I've been saying. What I have been saying is that both parties are pretty much the same. And they have demonstrated that over the past 16 years. Yes, the past 16 years. If you take a look at the eight years of Bill Clinton when he was president, and immediately 2 years after he became president, the Republicans took over the House or the Senate or the House anyway. And then they got the Senate. And then you look at the years with George W. Bush with a Republican House and Senate. And then the Democrats got control of They had control of the Senate for a while, and then they lost that, and now they got the House and Senate. If you take a look at the past 16 years, rather than writing to me and emailing me and telling me I'm a son of a bitch and a turncoat and you're sick of hearing the negativity and so on and so forth, why don't you cite me some examples? Huh? Why don't you try this? Well, you can't do it now because I've blocked all your emails. I blocked your email addresses because I'm sick of you, frankly. But how much better that would have been? At least then I might have been able to sit here and read your emails and said, okay, well, here's an example that this emailer is sending me that clearly shows the difference between the Republican and the Democratic Party as it has operated over the past 16 years. I'm not talking about in theory. I'm not talking about that magical, mythical, mystical Democrat Party that I talk about all the time, that Democratic Party of my youth. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about real politics, real actual stuff that's been going on for the past 16 years. And, you know, all I've asked for is a clear delineation, a clear example of the separation of the Republican and the Democratic parties. Now, if you start at the source, and that's where the money comes from, to fund both of these monstrous whores, no offense to sex workers, you will find that the money for both parties comes from the same source. Sources. Corporate America. And it gets even worse than that. The same corporations provide money. They use game theory about halfway into each one of these president's presidencies to figure out who's going to win the next time. And that's the person and the party that they back. It has not a damn thing to do with representative governance or democracy. Nothing. And that's been my point. That's been my whole point. And I've tried to use examples going all the way back to Jefferson and all the way up to George Wallace. All the warnings that have been strewed along the way from the framers warning against corporations even back then. Roosevelt, Lincoln, FDR, Lincoln, Jefferson, George Wallace, for Christ's sake. All the way up the line. But no, doesn't work. Because American politics, especially presidential politics, has been reduced to a sporting event. You know, this group wears the blue uniform, that group wears the red uniform. Okay, let's get down and dirty and funky and let's have our scrimmage. And my team's going to win this time, Malloy. Shut the goddamn hell up. My team's going to win. Okay. Your team probably will win. And what do you want to do? You want to make a date for a year from now, 2 years from now, and tell me how your life has improved? You want to show me how the Democratic Party has turned this mess around? Now, don't forget, I'm the one that has been telling you over and over and over again that it's going to be almost impossible to turn around. But you all are interested in one thing and one thing only. Either you wanted Hillary Clinton or you wanted Barack Obama to be the president. Why? I don't know. Because they are going to be absolutely crucified. Because of what the past 16 years has dumped in their laps. Especially the past 8. Oh, I concede that. I think Republicans are half human. I really do. But that's totally, absolutely beside the point. The point is, where do the resources come from that feed both parties? Aren't you aware of that? Now, let me ask you this at part two. Since we can stipulate, if we're honest, that the money for both parties, the big money, I'm not talking about the $10 million, $20 million, $30 million donations that come over the internet for Barack Obama. That's wonderful. That's glorious. And that ain't bat snot. And you know it isn't. The big money, the money that gets things done. Where does it come from? If we can stipulate that for both parties it comes from corporate America, then I have part two of the question. What makes some of you believe that corporate America, in funding both parties, in writing the agenda, lobbyists write the laws now, not your elected representative. Don't even, please don't fool yourself into believing that your representative writes legislation, because he or she doesn't. And I don't care if it's Democrat or Republican. They don't write the legislation. The corporate lobbyists do. Okay. If the corporations provide the fountain of money to both parties, depending on which one they think is going to win, or which one's in power, and sometimes they hedge their bets, they sell short, they don't care. They don't care. They don't care. Don't you get that yet? Because both political parties are completely in their control. Part two, I'll get to it. Part two of the question is, if what I've just said is true, if we can stipulate, yeah, okay, Malloy, okay, money comes from corporate America, so what? What makes you think that corporate America says to the Democrats, okay, now listen, we want you to govern entirely differently from the way we want the Republicans to govern. You see, the Republicans are the bad guys, and we've designated you the good guys. It's kind of like professional wrestling, okay? Matter of fact, it's a lot like professional wrestling when you get right down to it. But what makes you believe, gentle listener, that corporate America says one thing to the Democrats and something different to the Republicans? What makes you think that? Or don't you even think about it? Okay, think about it for a minute. Does it stand to reason? Is there any logic in thinking that corporate America, that controls both parties, would tell the Democrats, okay, we want you to put judges on the Supreme Court who support the right to privacy, and then say the Republicans, okay, we want you to put judges on the Supreme Court who deny people the right to privacy? What makes you think that? It's the same money, the same corporations, the same boards of directors, the same CEOs, the same one half of 1% who keeps jerking your ass around every 4 years. And mine. Now, for those of us who need to remain in la-la land and pretend, you know, we listen to Bill Clinton get up there talking about this, talking about the 22 million jobs he created. What do you suppose happened to those jobs? He left out the fact that he also created what Ross Perot called the giant sucking sound as millions of jobs left the country. God damn it, why does nobody acknowledge that? What's the matter, Clinton supporters? Too much reality for you? And it was on Bill Clinton's watch. He signed the legislation, didn't he? That made it easier for these predatory lending bastards to produce the housing disaster that we're now facing. And he has the guts to stand up there and talk about this stuff when it's partly his responsibility and partly the Bush crime families. It's amazing. But it doesn't matter what they say. I just don't understand, for the life of me, what is so hard about this? When the ABC cameraman who is trying to film the senators and the big donors getting together for their mutual admiration society and their payoffs, and the police moved in and arrested the cameraman, why didn't Barack Obama or Bill Clinton or Hillary immediately walk out on the street and say, let that man alone? Huh? I'll give you 4 minutes to think of your answer.
Sometimes I get it serious. All I have is one. Let me balance in your mind on the side. Yeah, but I'm just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh, Lord, please don't let me be.
Go gently into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Oh, did I get a little too nasty there? Gee, I'm sorry. So, you know, you got to wonder if you're trapped in my consciousness. I don't know what it's like in your consciousness, but, you know, when, and I watched on ABC tonight, the cigar-chewing cop, Denver cop, who grabs a guy who is standing on a public sidewalk, a film crew, video crew, with an established network. I realize it's all theater. I realize that, you know, I owe nothing to ABC and they don't owe anything to me. And that's clear every single night when they produce the news. But the audacity, the absolute audacity of cops grabbing a sound man and a camera guy and just shuffling them off to jail because they're trying to do their job. Nobody talks about it too much. I didn't see it on I don't watch CBS. I didn't see it on NBC. I did see it on ABC, obviously. So why is Barack Obama, why is not just one national Democrat saying anything about this? Another story. Denver police hit protesters with pepper spray from cannons and arrest 100 people. This is at rawstory.com. All these will be at my website tonight. You can check them out. According to a police bulletin in Denver, they're to stop people and see if they have city maps, because if you have city maps and you're in Denver, you could be planning violence. That's the rationale. We Are Change Colorado has some footage of the detention camps that are there to slap people into jail, temporary jail, if they have if they even attempt to exercise their First Amendment rights. So the Democrats. It's Republicans' turn next week, and God is really pissed off. Did you know that? The Republican God is furious. I don't know what he or it is furious about, but it is sending a massive hurricane into the U.S. Gulf Coast just about the time that the Republicans are supposed to get together for their little fun fest up in St. Paul, Minnesota. And there will be lots of pictures on the TV reminding people of the last time, 3 years ago, when a big hurricane slammed into the Gulf Coast and what George Bush did about it. So God, I guess, has finally started to listen to some of these right-wing nutball preachers. Every time there's a tornado someplace or a hurricane, well, it's, you know, God's punishing the queers. That's what, you know, that old Disney World down there, they have gay days. So God sent a hurricane that made 5 different landfalls in the state of Florida. Because you know what? God don't like queers. Okay. All right. Huh? Okay. So apparently God has decided to let the Republicans know he's really pissed at them. He's going to mess up their party. Insanity. Just insanity. But we have the Democrats tonight, this week. Yeah, we do. We have the entire Clinton family making speeches and talking about how Barack Obama is ready to lead, ready to be a commander in chief, ready to do this, ready to do that. What is that? You know, Barack Obama is no more ready to lead than you are, than I am. No president is ever ready to lead from day one. Their advisors, the people they surround themselves with, allegedly give them the balance and the expertise and the insight and the knowledge necessary to run. But what is this talk? What, is somebody going to tell me George Bush was ready to lead from day one? That crazy little ass? But the Clintons come out there because, you know, that's the deal, I guess. Corporate America gets them all together and says, all right, now listen to me. We want the crap to stop, and we want it to stop now. Get out there. Come on, Bill. You still count on us for millions for all your little projects and foundations. Oh, and they're wonderful. AIDS and HIV, and that's glorious and wonderful. You're doing great, Bill. And Hillary, you want to continue your political career? We're going to have the same conversation with Barack and Michelle. Just get out there and do some party unity. Get out there and present the face that America wants to see. Come on. Sit, heel, roll over. And what's a politician to do? Huh? What's a Democrat or Republican to do? So the game goes on. The game goes on, and that's cool. I mean, what the hell? It's just a game. It's all just a game. Eventually, you and I are going to die, and we're going to rot, and we're going to turn into soil if we're not cremated. And eventually, anyone and everyone who knew us or to whom we were related will all die. Everything dies eventually, or it goes on and we're forgotten. Another generation, then another generation, provided they're still on Earth. And then we just disappear. We never existed. We never existed. So why all this horse hockey now? What the hell is this? People who send me, and I relate this to me, you're damn right. People who send me email, well, Mike, I've listened to you for 5 years. Screw you. You misogynist son of a bitch. I'm never going to listen to you again. Why is that? What did I do? Pointed out the reality that we have two branches of one political party, and I don't give a damn who they present as their candidate.
What's fun is when they call me a misogynist.
Yeah, that works good. Yeah, my misogynist wife. All right, we'll be back after the break and see if we can get a program going here. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M. Welcome back. It is about 7 past the hour. There's another little piece of video we're going to link at my website. It's a Code Pink protester, Alicia Forrest. She's with the anti-war group Code Pink. She was arrested when police stepped in as a Kansas pastor tried to seize control of the Civic Center to denounce homosexuality. It's probably that crazy bastard. What's his name? Phelps? Is he from Kansas? If you want to look at the video right now, just go to YouTube and type in DNC protests, police slam, Code Pink protester to the ground. Police slam, Code Pink protester to the ground. He also calls her a bitch. You ought to sit. I mean, if you can stand, it's only about 36 seconds worth of video. If you can take a look at it, but I don't know what sort of reports. I've seen no media reports at all about this kind of violence coming, police violence coming out of Denver. I've heard nothing about violence except from the independent news sources from the Rocky Mountain News, which has been focusing on this very heavily. But I don't know how to say this without coming across. I know somebody's going to write in and say, you sexist, misogynist bastard, you. But I'm going to say it anyway. Here's what appears to be a young girl, Alicia. What's her last name? Alicia Forrest. dressed in pink, and a cop with a huge nightstick beats her, slams her. Take a look at the video. Slams her to the ground, just beats her to the ground. Now, this is the part I don't get. You know, I don't understand why some high-ranking Democrat doesn't come out and stop this. Okay, they don't want YouTube? They don't know about this? Nobody knows about this? Just you and me? And Rocky Mountain News? We're the only ones who know about this? I'm looking at the video here. It's got 91,000 views since it went up. And when did it go up? Don't know. And, you know, I know what I talked about a couple of months ago about Recreate 68 being a front CIA front organization. They're going to deliberately try to incite violence. But I don't think that that Alicia the Code Pink woman, Alicia Forrest? Yeah, Alicia Forrest. I don't think she was specifically trying to incite violence. As a matter of fact, look at the video yourself. You tell me. Does she look like she is inciting a violence, or does she look like she's just trying to exercise a fairly sedate First Amendment right? God. So if you want to see it, just go to YouTube and search for Code Pink protester slammed to the ground. I know it really is tough. It is difficult to wake up. The hardest part of the day for me is waking up in the morning. I mean, you know, maybe that's a function or a misfunction or a dysfunction of age. But it's getting harder and harder, and I have something really wonderful to wake up to. No offense, Kathy, but I have Molly. Kathy was pointing at herself. No, honey, Molly.
But I've been using night skin.
Yeah, I know you have, and God bless you for it. It's difficult to wake up, you know, to come out of the dreams and whatever insanity is ripping through your head when you're asleep, right? It is for me. I can have some of the most bizarre, scary, anxiety-filled dreams. You know, everybody has them. And to try to wake up in the morning. And I guess that's why it's so difficult for so many of us to wake up politically. It's just too difficult. You know, when Molly comes in and throws herself in the bed, you know, Daddy, get up! Come on, Daddy, play with me. You know, it's just like, oh, my God, please, Molly, please let me go back to sleep. Same thing, I guess, you know, trying to wake up politically. But shouldn't we take note when the wealthy Democrats and the wealthy lobbyists and the wealthy corporatists all get together to determine the direction of the Democratic Party, not the rhetoric. They leave the rhetoric to the young speechwriters and even sometimes to the candidates, because the candidates learn very quickly. They know what to say. They know what they're supposed to say, just like the Republican candidates. Of course, Republican are slime, and I don't care anymore about Republicans. And I'm getting to the point I don't care anymore about Democrats either. But I love to hear the stories. When Michelle Obama gave her speech last night, it was just like, oh, my God, I love this. I'm sitting here. I'm getting tears in my eyes. I'm thinking, oh, you know, 350 years of oppression. And all of a sudden, it's starting to lift. It's starting to go away. I remember when I was in high school, and a friend of mine and I took off just for the sheer hell of it we were gone about 2 weeks. And jumped in his old car. He had a 53 Oldsmobile, and we drove all the way to Clearwater Beach, Florida, from Toledo, Ohio. And, you know, we stopped in Georgia, down near the Florida border someplace, Folkestone, Georgia, or Ludowice, Georgia, or one of those just crazed South Georgia towns. You know, 50 years ago, it was a hell of a lot more crazed than it would be now. But we stopped in this little town at a Dairy Queen. and we were tired. We'd been driving like 2 days. There were some interstates, but not many. Little patches here and there. And we stopped at a Dairy Queen, a couple of white ladies inside. And, you know, I just desperately wanted a chocolate ice cream cone. And my friend Jerry wanted a vanilla ice cream cone. And we'd picked up this hitchhiker. And he wanted vanilla ice cream cone. So they stood in line, and I'm looking at the Dairy Queen. Well, naturally, I went to the window where they sell chocolate ice cream. Of course, you know, I'm trying to make things easy. Haven't slept for 2 days. Two nice old Caucasian ladies in there. I just want me a chocolate ice cream cone. That's all I want. And I'm standing there. And they wait on my friends, and they get their ice cream. And they're leaning up against the 53 Oldsmobile with the Ohio plates on it, eating their ice cream. And I'm still standing there. They won't come over. And I'm thinking to myself, well, son of a bitch, maybe the chocolate machine is broken. What? What's the problem? And we're just standing there. They're eating their ice cream cone. The two white ladies inside are looking and kind of whispering and looking at me. And I'm standing outside in the early morning heat. And then I look up and I see, I don't know what's wrong, because right above the window I'm standing at, it says colored. That's chocolate ice cream, right? Oops. So I went to the other window. May I help you? Yeah, I'd like one of your medium-sized chocolate ice cream cones. Where are you from? We're from Ohio. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to watch Michelle Obama give that speech and to realize that I, as a Caucasian American, in my lifetime, I'm one of those. I'm one of those. I'm going, holy God, I didn't think this would happen. And I get right on the verge of saying, yes, glory, hallelujah, the truth is marching. And then I stop and think, wait a second, wait a second, wait a second, wait a second, wait a second. If this is on script, then I'm a fool for celebrating it. If it's not on script, then I'm going to be very, very sad very, very soon. Because if it's not on script, then I worry for Barack Obama. The same way, in retrospect, that most of us now can look back and realize why we should have worried for John Fitzgerald Kennedy. But we didn't know. We didn't realize. It's only been since he was assassinated that we figured out, or we were told, or we read about what he was really about. Or Dr. Martin Luther King, right? As long as he was a good house Negro and just got people to boycott buses in Montgomery and do this and do that, maybe lead a few parades, okay. But when he challenged corporate America, they killed him. Do you understand that?
The fire's burning and the local people turning on the merchants and the shops who used to sell their brooms and mops and every other household item. Watch a mob just turn and bite them, and they say it served them right because a few of them were white. And it's the same across the nation, black and white discrimination. And you can't understand me and all that other jazz they hand me in the papers and TV and all that masculinity that seems to grow more.
And your day screaming with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
My son, I think I am. Am I the father that I think I am?
It is 21 past the hour. By the way, we have a letter from Bridget tonight. So stick around for that. What else we got here? Just my bitching and complaining, I guess, huh? Yeah, well. I just wish there was some actual news coverage. You know, all these pundits and the anchor people sit inside the convention center, up in their lofty perches. Oh, and they sit there and make comments about whether or not Hillary Clinton's inflections were where they should have been, whether or not Barack Obama has been helped or hurt by Hillary's trying to get her Puma people together, and what Bill Clinton's going to talk about, and yada, yada, yada. And it's it's not important. You can get that from one of your drinking buddies or the bartender or somebody you hang out with. You get the same thing, probably even more insightful. Why aren't they out in the streets filming a 24-year-old young woman being smashed to the ground because she had the audacity to ask a cop why somebody was getting arrested? And what's the point in calling her a bitch? And why didn't ABC send another camera crew and another and another and another and another? God damn it, they're wealthy. They're corporate America. Keep sending the camera crews. A whole line of camera crews. Like Mickey Mouse and Fantasia with the broomsticks, and they just kept coming and coming and coming. Send camera crews. Keep going. Everybody's got a video cam now. But not everybody has the shoulder held video cam and the line producer and the sound man and everybody on the street. Come on, you guys. You're willing to go to a war zone and get your footage? There's a war zone out there. Right in the streets of Denver. And your people are being beat up and arrested. A cameraman, a producer standing on a public street, filming or videotaping people going into a high roller party and trying to ask them questions about, hey, what's the party about? Hey, what's going on? Hey, care to be interviewed for a second? The cops come up. And that's it. Well, I'm not a crusader at all. I mean, everybody's their own crusader. And again, the issues that I think I've brought up legitimately over the past couple of weeks or couple of months, trying to confront what's happened politically in this country, doesn't warrant the if anyone were really listening to the program, doesn't warrant the kind of hateful, nasty, biting emails I've gotten. I'm not trying to pee on your parade. If you want to support Hillary, support Hillary. But don't send me the snarky emails or the idiotic, ignorant emails telling me that she's a liberal, for Christ's sake, or that she's a progressive. That's where you and I part company. And then when I start pointing out using her record as a basis for trying to say, no, she's not a liberal, she's not a progressive, she's a corporate Democrat, yada yada, and then you unload. Okay, go to hell. I mean, I'm not Tom Hartman. I'm not looking for peace and reconciliation. I really am not. I'm looking for this. If you can't get it, go to hell. Go to hell. That's all. Go play in the sandbox. Go do whatever you want to do. Fool. It's your country you're pissing away because you think you're backing a liberal or a progressive Democrat. What is wrong with you? Now, if you're Republican, you've already drunk the Kool-Aid and eaten the blue pill. You are so far gone, it doesn't make any difference, and you're not listening to this program anyway. So, you know, there's no point in talking to them. They don't dare listen to this program. Excuse me, but I look at, some of that footage that for some unknown reason, Brian Ross at ABC managed to get it on the air. The supervising producer must have been asleep on that newscast. Or maybe they just do that to, as kind of an in-house joke. Well, let's let the idiots see a little bit of how the really important people operate with the Democratic Party as well as the Republican. Let's give them a little taste. So we get a little taste. These great big-ass parties. Pelosi's 100. Pelosi's 100? These are people who have contributed personal money now, not corporate money. At least $100,000 to the party, which I guess is still legal. If it weren't legal, the Republicans and the Democrats would make damn good and sure it's legal by tomorrow morning, retroactively. The Republicans and Democrats are really into retroactivity now. Corporations break the law? Quick! Let's give them retroactive immunity. Ha ha! Ah, damn, I like this! Jesus, thank goodness for George Bush. Are we going to give this up when we get the White House? Why, hell no!
Have you ever heard of the hard to get game? How can I miss you when you walk away? I keep telling you day after day, but you won't listen. You always stay and stay. How can I miss you when
Truth Seekers, time to snuggle up with your favorite screamer, more Mike Malloy.
It's about 25 before the hour. All right, I think it's time for a letter from Bridget. Hi, Mike. I've been watching some of the convention coverage, but mostly watching myself watch the convention coverage. That's not quite as narcissistic an action as it might sound. I've been watching how I and friends and talk show hosts are being seduced by really good choreography. One expects a political convention to be a well-orchestrated event. After all, it's not really about nominating anyone. It's about getting the party regulars all fired up in the convention hall so that they will go home to their communities and go to work for the candidate or the candidates whose presentation to the TV-watching masses is the main point of the gathering. I, with almost everyone else, was touched by Teddy Kennedy's appearance and his, quote, passing of the torch, end quote. I was charmed by Michelle and her story, delighted with the kids and the family scene, and I could almost feel Camelot peering through the mists. I thought Hillary gave a wonderful speech. As long as I do what my mother always cautioned and consider the source. There have been many other inspiring faces and words, all aimed at reminding all of us, good Democrats, how wonderful our ideals are, and how much better the words and visions of our leaders reflect our own beliefs than the platitudes and lies that the other side produces. Please note, our side and the other side are the only ones ever mentioned in this two-dimensional universe. I'm sure Bill will be charming and engaging tonight, and all good Democrats will swoon in reverie for the good old days, and that Obama's acceptance speech Thursday will be a barn, or rather a stadium burner. So knowing I'm being manipulated, I've been trying to figure out how I feel about that. And quite honestly, I'm not sure that I mind. I'm listening to smart, articulate people say everything I want to hear and giving me a momentary vision of, as Michelle put it, the world as it should be. Damn it, I want to believe that those gathered in Denver this week will come charging out of this convention to end the occupation in Iraq, make universal health care a reality, fix the economy, preserve Social Security, make us energy independent with alternative energy, reverse global warming, bring back jobs, get the money out of politics, and return the system to the people. That would do for starters. And I do believe that some of them, like those of us out here being seduced, are willing to work as hard as we can for those goals. So what's this nagging goblin on my shoulder whispering? Something about I'm watching an illusion? After all, remember who authorized the war? Who confirmed the fascists to the Supreme Court? Who took impeachment off the table? Who put immunity for the telecoms on the table and generally rolled over and played dead whenever any of the scary Republican thugs said boo? But then the fairy with the magic dust flits by and I ask myself another question. Okay, so what? What if I let myself hope again? What if I let myself believe that this time, because of fill in the blank, it will be different that those for whom we work our hearts out and in whom we put our trust will actually remember us and not only pay homage to those who shake hands with a checkbook. If you're not willing to hope, willing to believe, willing to give this dream a chance, then why even watch it? Why bother to pay attention? Why bother to listen to the radio, read the newspapers, go to the internet? If you don't believe it can be different or that even a little difference matters, why not ignore the whole political system? Shall I hope and risk getting my teeth kicked in one more time, or do I retreat deep into the woods and function under another illusion that there's anywhere I can go where my life won't be affected by the political machinations of those who want to make the world in their image? Actually, before Bush leaves office, new regulations will open the door to cutting down whatever old growth forests remain. So much for retreating into the deep woods. I know I'm going to be disappointed and angry and writing letters and making phone calls even if Obama's elected and has a filibuster-proof majority in the Senate. But I'm one of those old hippie chicks who learned to fight as well as love and whose first political memories were of John Kennedy. And I think I'm going to let myself be seduced by a dream one more time. We'll see what happens. All my best, Bridget. A letter from Bridget. Thank you, Bridget. It's about 20 before the hour. I guess I could say, now that's the way to write a dissenting point of view to this program. I know what you mean. Regarding the guy who was popped, the ABC camera segment producer, I guess that's what they call him. That's what we used to call him at CNN, a segment producer. The guy that got roughed up and then arrested for, you know, trying to do his job. Regarding that story, Brian Ross, Rhonda Schwartz, and a couple other people have this at ABC News' website. It says, while its elected officials say it is the party of, quote, the working people, end quote, Democrats are quietly running an elaborate VIP program that rewards wealthy contributors with luxury perks and insider access at the Denver convention, part of what the party calls a, quote, business plan, end quote. Republicans run a similar program for their top donors, and the Democrats seem to have learned from it. Democratic Party Chairman Howard Dean told donors at a private party this week that was attended by an ABC News reporter, quote, you have helped us put in the business plan for winning elections, end quote. He went on to say, Howard Dean said, quote, without your money, none of this happens, end quote. Speaker Nancy Pelosi has created the Pelosi 100 for people who contribute and raise $100,000 in personal funds, according to documents obtained by ABC News. The wealthy members of the Pelosi 100 attended a private lavish party Monday night in the penthouse suite of the Denver Performing Arts Center, featuring Tony Bennett, John Legend, and James Taylor. There was a heavy security presence, with police telling reporters, no media allowed! Although observers on the balcony of a nearby apartment building could view the scene. Also included in the $100,000 Pelosi package was what is referred to as preferred booking at a top downtown Denver hotel, 4 convention hall press credentials, and access to luxury skyboxes overlooking the convention floor. Of course, last night, the wealthy donors in the skybox watched as Senator Hillary Clinton praised Barack Obama for knowing, quote, the government must be about we the people, not we the favored few, end quote. See, this is that's the thing that I guess pisses me off more than anything else. I remember hearing Hillary say that last night, and I have the thought today. Nothing that she said last night was the least bit creative, original, or inspiring. It was the same old Democratic Party upper level crap that we've been listening to now for how many election cycles. Nothing changes. Nothing changes. And I'll be doing the same thing to the Republicans. Don't worry. I guess. I mean, like I said, I think Republicans are already eaters of the dead. They're zombies who have risen up out of crypts and mossy dead places to screw everything up. But it's amazing to me that a Democrat such as Hillary Clinton, and Hillary Clinton is a Democrat. She is the personification of corporate Democrats, even more so than her husband, I think. Her husband's in a whole different thing now. He's into the nonprofit business where you can make a hell of a lot of money. Oh, my God, you can make money in nonprofits. You know, pick a disease, pick a syndrome, pick something and attack it globally. Oh, you kidding me? You talk about first class travel and meeting heads of state and a lot of money in the disease business, tremendous amount of money in the disease, like the religion business, tremendous amount of money. But the Republicans, you expect this from the Democrats, to have someone as sophisticated in how everything works as Hillary Clinton standing there saying that, Barack knows that the government must be about we the people and not we the favored few. Who is she talking to? Do the people in the skyboxes sit there and chuckle behind their martinis? Do they choke on their very lightly sea-salted cocktail nuts? I mean, a statement like that? Oh, my God.
According to the little Tehran. And the Ayatollah bought a nuclear warship. If he dies, he wants to go out in style. And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of certain ways dumped in the Nile. Well, one thing is certainly true. No one here knows what to do, and I'm sick.
It's okay, Republicans. The pain will be over soon. Take a deep breath. Find your happy place. It's more of Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. You're going to get your phone calls when we come back after this top of the hour break. So if you want to get on the queue, it's 800-989-1480. Do join us. Meanwhile, while all of the upper echelon of the so-called Democratic Progressive Liberal Party, the Working Person's Party, the Coalition Party, the Party of Working Man and Woman, the Party of Unions, the Party of Unity, the Party of... While all that's going on, in those million-dollar skyboxes for the really important members of the Democratic Party, those are not the ones who vote or knock on doors. Those are ones who provide the money. In other words, the lobbyists who then turn around and expect the Democrats, without disappointment, to respond to the corporations that the lobbyists work for. That's how the system works. It is just so smooth, so easy, so seamless. And for the most part, never any fingerprints left behind at the scene of the crime. It just works like a charm. Works like a charm. Until some line producer or segment producer at ABC decides he would like to get some comments from the rich people going in to support the Democratic Party. Then it's not so seamless. Delegates outside of the skybox crowd, according to ABC, stood in line for $7 hot dogs. So, I bet they weren't even kosher. $7 hot dogs. And by the way, they were not permitted to bring that food, quote, to their seats inside the Pepsi Center. The Pepsi Center. And tomorrow it's going to be, what's the stadium where Brock is going to give his speech? The Invesco Stadium. You know, it the Pepsi Center. Ellen Miller has been quoted a lot on TV. She's with the Sunlight Foundation. It's a nonprofit that pushes for openness in politics. Probably one of those nonprofits that doesn't make a lot of money. You know what I'm talking about. The nonprofits make a lot of money. The ones that attach themselves to syndromes or illnesses or noble causes. And in some instances, even though there's a lot of money there, in some instances, people do get helped. Yeah, that's kind of the side effect, but people do get help. Anyway, Ellen Miller of the Sunlight Foundation said, quote, "It feels very elitist to flaunt the fact," she said, "that there is a higher elite class of people, the big political donors, who have reached that status because they have more money. It feels fundamentally undemocratic," end quote. Well, yeah. You're right. Fundamentally undemocratic. With the democratic capital D or small d. Works both ways. Now, I know what you're thinking. Federal election laws have a maximum of $2,300 per individual per candidate. But the Democrats learned from the Republicans and know how to work around the limit. One wealthy lawyer who did not want his name used for fear he would be cut off from the VIP program told ABC, quote, "They present us an entire menu and it can involve $1 million or more spread around various candidates and committees around the country," end quote. Among those seen this week, ABC reports, at one private luncheon for big donors and top Democratic senators was Fred Barron, the Texas lawyer who helped hide the one-time mistress of former Senator John Edwards. Barron is a member of the Legacy Circle, so-called, because he has given more than $25,000 to Democratic candidates, plural, for the U.S. Senate. Well, how do you feel with that $20 now that you sent to Barack Obama? Maybe you sent it 2 or 3 times. How do you feel about that? This is from Diana, Manhattan, Kansas. Mike, I'm with you on this point. The corporate Democrats need to step out of their Citadel convention site and stand up for those getting battered on the streets. How hard could that be? Call a press conference outside the convention center asking for the police to back off of citizens who have a right to express opinions and ask questions in the public square. If the Democrats could do that, I might get a bit interested in them once again. Diane, Manhattan, Kansas. Yeah, how hard is that? You know, the party of the people. I mean, the Republicans, you expect at the Republican convention, if somebody is being assaulted by the militaristic police departments in whatever city, in this case it's going to be St. Paul, and the Republicans will probably have National Guard and Blackwater out there, but at the Republican convention, if someone's being assaulted, the doors will swing open and out will pour, 10, 15, 20 college Republicans who immediately surround the person lying bloodied on the street and start chanting things like, "Death to fags! Death to fags! You're a liberal! Death to fags! We hate you! Be a Republican! We don't like you! Death to don't abort your baby! But I'm a guy!" Well, so what? Death to fags! Oh, well. Jesus, God. Is Barack at the convention? Bring it up real quick.
I think Michelle Obama kicked it off pretty well, don't you think?
Oh, what a surprise!
If I'm not mistaken, Hillary Clinton rocked the house last night.
Well, if he'll stick around during our news break. Hey, Brock, you're going to stick around? What? I'm sorry, I can't hear you. All right, we'll be back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
story in your eyes. It's been shining down upon you now. Realize.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Yeah, we're here. It's seven past the hour. Well, tomorrow night will be the barn burner. There's no question, or as Bridget said in her letter, the stadium burner. I have to say right here and now, I beyond anything else. Everything else can step aside for a second. I really have to respect Barack Obama's bravery, his courage. He's going to be out in that stadium and really putting himself at risk. Now, again, if he there's one way to look at this, and I'm not saying it's the right way or the proper way, but again, I've been around through an awful lot of political assassinations just in this country in my lifetime. And so here's the, as Brother Dave would say, the hard saying. If Barack Obama is on message the way he's supposed to be, I don't think anything untoward will happen at Mile High Stadium or Invesco Field, however you want to identify it. If he is not on target, or I'm sorry, if he's not on topic the way he should be, the way JFK was not, then he's at some risk. You know this, and I know this. And we're not supposed to talk about it, because to talk about it is impolite, and even beyond that, may even bring a visit from the Secret Service. What were you talking about last night? Now, the two, did you see pictures of the two people that they busted, who supposedly were on their way to Denver to wreak havoc on the Obama family? Did you see their pictures? Huh? Oh, my God. Wasn't one of them's name was Adolf? Unbelievable. And what, they're not going to charge him, even though they were meth heads strung out, complete, loaded with weaponry. I think I haven't paid too much attention to the story because it didn't get a lot of attention. What was it, CBS4 in Denver that did most of the reporting on this? But I saw some pictures of these two clowns. Jesus God, if I were out walking somewhere and saw these two coming at me, I don't care if I was in the country, in the woods, in the middle of midtown Manhattan, walking down the aisle of an airplane to go pee, and I saw these two, I would duck and cover. But you're not going to charge him with terroristic threats, even though it was all over the place. They were going to Denver to kill Barack Obama. Not going to charge him. Nah, we don't have any, not enough evidence. You know, just a couple of meth heads sitting around talking. Really? That's all it was. Oh, okay. A couple of meth heads sitting around talking. Oh, no threat there. I just wonder if anybody in the militarized police department that popped these two monsters, if they've ever done any kind of speed. Doesn't have to be methamphetamine or methadrine or you know, it can be cocaine, could have been diet pills. Well, let me tell you something. I have. I've done that. I've done those drugs. I did those drugs back in the day. And when you're high on speed, you know, we used to have a saying at the free clinic here in Atlanta, speed kills. That's when we all got smart, realized what the hell was going on inside your body. You ever seen those pictures? This is a 25-year-old man who was killed in a car crash. Here's his heart. See his heart? Yeah. Oh, damn. Hey, here's a 25-year-old man who has been doing speed for the past 6 years and overdosed and died. Look at his heart. Jesus God, it looks like a walnut! Right. When you're high on that stuff and you start talking about whatever it is you're talking about, you're deadly serious. You're not kidding when you're high on that kind of junk. You're not kidding. Now, if you're drugged out on something else, I mean, opium eater or heroin or reefer, you know, it's got, to a lesser extent, even booze, although booze can really bring out the nasty, aggressive side of a person. But, the other drugs, you know, you just, oh man, hey, listen, you want to go rob something? Yeah, in a minute, as soon as I finish these Cheetos, right? You know, nothing ever happens. But on meth, on speed? So the last I heard, I don't know, maybe there's an update to the story, but the last I heard, these two Cro-Magnons are being released. Did you see a picture of them? Oh, my God. All right. So all that just to say that aside from everything else, you know, I can't help but just feel a tremendous attraction towards the Obama family. For, you know, on so many levels, for so many reasons. And so we'll see what happens, right? I'm talking about the family. I'm not talking anything political now. I just hope that corporate America figures that he is going to be good for corporate America, because if that's the case, then I'm pretty sure he'll be okay. Phone number here is 800-989-1480 if you would like to get it said. Let's go to Dave in Worcester, Mass., who is listening on the Internet. Dave, welcome to the program.
Yes, I'd like to talk about the speech tonight.
Which one?
The second one, Biden's speech.
I didn't hear that one. Go ahead. What about it?
Well, he was commending our troops, men and women of uniform.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I think it's a shame that McCain wants to cut all the benefits to the every single bill that was out. He's cut to the to our military, to our veterans.
Yeah.
And I just think it's absurd, you know.
Yeah. Why do you suppose that military people, especially retired military people, don't understand that? Why would they vote for him? Why would they vote for him?
I don't know, because evidently they say McCain was a war hero. So wasn't John Kerry. John Kerry was a true war hero, and his swift vote is just really bash him into the dirt. It's just like, you know, I think it's crazy. You know, what's your opinion on that?
You know? Well, I agree with you. ThinkProgress.org had something up, I think it was today. Let me share some of this with you. Despite his repeated claims to the contrary, McCain's record on veterans health funding is disappointing, to say the least. He voted against providing $430 million to the VA for outpatient care and treatment for veterans. He was one of only 13 senators to do that. He voted against the money. He voted against increasing VA funding by $1.5 billion by closing corporate loopholes. He voted against increasing VA funding by $1.8 billion by ending abusive tax loopholes. Every single chance that McCain has had to vote against veterans, he's voted against veterans. And I don't quite understand that, unless he is suffering from some really weird post-traumatic stress disorder, which I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. And if that's the case, I hope the man gets some help, because I understand it's pretty grim. But if he's suffering from some sort of PTSD that requires him to be so anti-military that he is willing to dump on people who have been wounded, who have been hurt, who have been harmed fighting America's corporate wars, if that's the case, then I think veterans need to call him out on it, whether it's VFW or AMVETS or, you know, no matter what it is. I wouldn't think any veteran in this country would vote for this son of a bitch after what he's how he's disrespected veterans. How could a veteran vote for him? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. It's just appalling to me. I just don't understand that. You know.
Yeah.
In 6 months when we're coming out of Iraq, hopefully. Are they going to use Iraqi money, oil money, to pay for that, or are they going to use our money to pay for that?
Well, you'd think, wouldn't you, that they would use some of this Iraqi oil money, that the Iraqi government would first get rid of the U.S. We never had any business going there to begin with on any level. And then just, pump their oil, sell it on the market, and fix the country that we have smashed for the past 15 years.
Liberals talking to me, I don't see things their way. Yeah, I'm on the right side.
And Your Day Screening with Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio.
It's 21 past the hour. All right, I'm coming to your phone calls here in just a second. This is, I got an email here from Roma. God, I wish you people would put a name down so I can give you credit for what you sent. Anyway, Roma writes, "Hi, Mike. America, it's over. Once you get that firm in your mind, it all just flows naturally. It was already foreseen by men of keen insight who knew intuitively that the American experience might be corrupted. Well, we've proven them correct in spades. It is over. Has been for some 60 years. A lifelong Democrat, I've decided to vote for a third-party candidate, perhaps Nader or someone else. At the very least, it would be my vote and not predetermined by corporate hacks who have, in essence, destroyed the grand experiment of some very astute gentleman." And then he has a quote here, Roma. It's a quote from Jefferson. "If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issue of their money, first by inflation and then by deflation, the banks and corporations that will grow up around them, around the banks, will deprive the people of their property until their children will wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered." And then there's another quote from Jefferson. "I hope we shall crush in its birth the aristocracy of our moneyed corporations, which dare already to challenge our government to a trial by strength and bid defiance to the laws of our country." Good God, that was 230 years ago. And now we have corporate ownership of the political parties. They also warned us against political parties, the founders. Oh, my goodness. Oh, well. Let's do some phone calls. We have another break coming here pretty quick, but let's do some phone calls. Let's do Robert, who is in Wisconsin, listening on the mic. Hey, Robert.
Hey, Malloy. Hey, first, I got to thank you for turning me on to Pravda.ru.
Yeah, that's a good
site,
isn't it?
I check that out every day.
Yeah, it's written, a lot of it's written by Americans.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy it. I'm calling because, as a Democrat, I am just thoroughly disgusted with the way Pelosi's 100-party, the security, the police, roughed up that ABC crew. And, you know, that was just like the straw that broke the camel's back for me, because I was already getting disgusted the way Barack was moving towards the center, and I could excuse that. I'm like, oh, you know, he's just doing it to get votes. And then next was the FISA bill. The next thing was when only four senators stood up to this Mukasey, who should be impeached, but only four senators stood up and sent him a letter asking him to please wait, you know, and by signing whatever that thing is he's got to sign to take away more of our rights.
Mm-hmm.
But, Malloy, if you ever start a breakaway republic, I'm right there to help you, man.
Well, if we can get some corporate sponsorship, maybe.
Yeah, right.
Maybe we could do that. All right. Well, listen, Robert, thanks. I appreciate you checking in, pal. I really do. To me, just my little personal tragedy of Obama is the personal tragedy I felt back in the 90s about the Clintons. And that was, you know, you want to believe. You really do. Just like the letter from Bridget tonight, you know, one more time. I'm gonna take a shot one more time. How many times have we done that? And you want to believe? I listened to these speeches. I listened to Bill Clinton as he battled George Herbert Bush to deny the first Bush a second term. I listened to the speechifying. I've listened to Barack Obama. I listened to these Democratic candidates, Kucinich. I've listened to all of them. And they completely move me. They really do. And I sit there when one of these leading Democrats gives a speech, or like Michelle Obama's speech, like I said, or the many times I've heard Barack Obama. And I just sit there and I feel the tears welling up in my eyes because I want to believe. I just want to believe. I really do. I would be such a good soldier in the army of Democratic Party reform. But I've been that soldier. I've been in that army for a long time, and I'm just tired. I've got too many bullet holes, just like you, you know. Walked too many miles, got too exhausted to be fooled again and again and again. I feel like a member of the Christian Coalition voting for a Republican. Same thing. The two political parties are interested in power, and the power that they're interested in is the power of corporate America. That Jefferson said, the children will wake up in the morning and realize that they've been thrown out of the homes that their fathers fought to give them. And if we're not at that point now, well, will somebody please tell me what this is that we're all witnessing then?
I have something to say, and I thought it might be worth a mention. If you're not pissed off at the world, then you're just not paying attention. You can turn off the TV and go about your day. But just 'cause you don't see it, it don't mean it's gone away.
This is Laura Pigglesbush. When Georgie falls asleep, I creep into the Oval Office, sneak a ciggy, and turn on Mike Malloy. Then I reprogram Georgie's speed dial. The simple pleasures.
Money's good. Work's okay. It's 25 before the hour here on the Malloy program on Nova M Radio. Let's go back to your phone calls. Ryan is calling from Scottsdale, Arizona, listening on KPHX. Hey, Ryan.
Hey, Mike. Quite an honor. This is the first time I've ever gotten through to you, and I've actually even met you in person when you're here in town.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I met you when you were at Access Radius, and at the very end of the night, and let me tell you, boy, did you have a – boy, were you lit up a little.
Everybody kept giving me wine. What the hell am I going to do, say no?
Oh, of course not. You were quite entertaining at the time.
Well, good. I didn't do anything that was really ugly or nasty, did I?
Oh no! You were being your good old self, talking politics at the top of your lungs, maybe just a little bit more slurred than usual. But I have also an interesting story about meeting Randy Rhoads at a similar event here.
Yeah, well, I don't want to hear that one.
Yeah, but anyway, it's quite an honor to finally get through to you.
Yeah.
A couple of things I wanted to mention. First of all, I haven't been able to turn on the TV. I literally just walked in the door from work. I had quite a day month end here, but this whole story, if I was just driving home and listening to you talk about somebody named Adolf who's a tweaker trying to kill Obama, if this is really getting as little media play as you're saying it is, this is just astonishing. Because just put this in context. Somebody named Adolf was about to kill the first black nominee of a major political party here in this country. You couldn't script that.
I know.
I mean, this story.
Well, he was just one. The other one had a strange name. His first name slips totally slips my mind. But what I was commenting on, two things. First of all, as you point out, the lack of coverage. Now, there's a theory behind that. You don't give these vermin coverage because if you do, then you get a bunch of copycat psychopaths who say, oh, man, I want to be on CNN, too. So they, you know, start to do the same thing. That's A. B. The other interesting thing about this to me was the fact that if someone were to send me an email or to call this program and say that they were going to do harm to George W. Bush, I would be willing to bet pretty much, because this has happened before, that within 24 hours, our home office in Phoenix out there would be asked for a copy of the recording of the program so they could try to locate the person who made the comment. Uh-huh. And then they would follow up. These two that were picked up, and it's according to, I think it's CBS4 in Denver, these two, not only did they have weapons and drugs, but they had got the word out that they were going to Denver for one specific reason, and they had even they had brought with them, if I remember the story correctly, it was only a couple of days ago, they had brought with them a weapon that was capable of hitting a target at like 450, 500, 600 yards. Now, the only thing I can think of that is truly effective in doing that, I mean, truly, there are a lot of weapons that can do that, but that's one of those 50 caliber scoped rifles that are just absolutely lethal weapon. And you know, I think about how quickly the story was reported and disappeared. And then the follow-up was that the police just didn't take the threat seriously, and they may charge him with drug possession or illegal weapon possession or something, but as far as a threat to a senator of the United States, this is just too bizarre for me, too weird.
Well, and again, for me, obviously, the you know, your first point about why they wouldn't cover it, that, you know, it'd gin up other people to want to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's why we're still hearing about Columbine all these years later, if that were true.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right.
And again, all I can say is, you know, how else to say it, this story would have legs if covered. This story, it's a sexy story. You know what I mean? Somebody named Adolf trying to kill our black nominee. I mean, if you put that in a fictional movie, people would say that's too absurd to believe.
Right.
That's astonishing. I almost don't know where to go with it. So I mean, all I can say is everybody listening to this program, be talking about this tomorrow at work and on your blogs and et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is a second thing that I wanted to mention here that is not an original idea that I actually heard listening to the Jeff Ferris show only last week, is being covered by Cynthia Black here. Somebody called in. They were doing this locally. And, oh, my gosh, the moment I heard this, it was a bell going off in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because we here in Arizona have the misfortune and yet almost, I would say, responsibility to try to use the fact that we are in the home state of McCain the murderer here to do something about that. And this woman called in. She said, you know, a few of us, we went outside one of his houses, and we held up a bunch of signs saying, hey, John, this is one of your houses. Just in case you were lost, you didn't know, this is one of them. This is one of them. And I can't get this out of my mind since I heard it. It was this little 30-second thing somebody mentioned.
Right, right.
But since then, it's echoing around in my head. And all I keep thinking of this image I had of a bunch of people who got into a Kerry convention waving flip-flops, you know, last presidential cycle, and how they used that stupid little flip-flop thing and Swift votes. I mean, really, you can break it down to four syllables, you know, what the Republicans used to sink John Kerry. Well, you know what? He does have a number of houses here. And
yeah.
You know what? If we got enough of us out there doing that on a regular basis, standing outside of his house, maybe even for a few blocks around saying, you know, like, hey, John, trying to help you out, is that way, you know, directing towards the house, put up the addresses on the website here. I'm going to be calling Ferris, the show locally, and Randy, and everybody I can get on the phone to. Because I really think that if we got some of us out there,
mm-hmm.
this is something that could be covered.
It could have the comedic element or aspect or value that, you know, it's very difficult to fight really good humor where a political candidate is the butt of the joke or the object of the joke. It's very difficult to resist that. You can resist the kind of stuff you hear on this program, from me by just ignoring it. Very simple. Well, Malloy is just out of his mind. He's insane. He calls us names, so just ignore him. But real good, that's why political cartoonists are so effective in getting their point across.
I remember one of my favorite political cartoons. It still sticks out in my mind. It was right after Bush was selected by the Supreme Court the first time. And it was, I think it was the London Mirror or the Times of London, mm-hmm. because he was so crappy with geography and he'd screwed up. He didn't know the Prime Minister of India. Right. He didn't know where Pakistan was. And he had a map of the world and it said, "Hello, President Bush, welcome." And it had an arrow pointing to Great Britain and it said, "We are here."
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I still remember that.
Yeah, that, yeah, good, acidic humor gets the point across so much better. Diane is calling from Boulder, listening on the internet. Hey, Diane.
Hey.
Haven't heard from you for about a year and a half.
No, it's been longer.
Yeah, what? Where you been?
Well, I was trying to, like, study and learn things and survive.
How'd that work?
Not very well, anyway.
How'd that work out? You doing okay?
No, I'm not.
Oh, okay.
Right. No, it's not anything big. I'm blessed. Things
oh, okay.
are okay. It's just, I just have this feeling that during this campaign, the Democratic campaign, we've been played.
Ah.
I know you know me, right?
Yes.
I haven't gone nuts. Right?
I hope not.
You're, okay.
Yeah, I just wondered what happened to you.
I've been a supporter of Hillary Clinton, and I spent the past couple of days hanging out with the Pumas.
Yeah?
And I know that there are probably people who are like the ones who are indoctrinated, who have got their marching orders, say, donate to McCain, which tips me off immediately because he has more money than God.
Right.
His bootlegger wife has more money than God.
Yes.
Therefore, he does not need the money, but what it is the trigger. Those are publicly reported contributions.
Right.
And anybody who wants to have any type of reform activity with what actually happened in this campaign,
mm-hmm.
where caucuses were ill-run, and there were reports that have been affidavited that people associated with Obama's campaign took envelopes and messed with them. Now, I know I don't have all the proof right in front of me, and I'm not going to say I absolutely know this. But at least there was some cause for investigation. And I'm not talking about the primary should be abolished. I think they should be strengthened because primaries run by the state go under the same criteria as the ballots that we're trying to get clean,
mm-hmm.
trying to have the election machine
sure.
eliminated.
Sure.
We're trying to get a system of order so things cannot be gamed. But even those details were buried by the rhetoric that was you were talking about, the power of humor. Being able to go after Hillary Clinton, but the same memes I heard in 1992 about how old she is, how ugly she is, how her ankles are, who she may have slept with, who she may have killed. I heard them from sources that I did not expect to hear them.
Uh-huh.
I heard them not just from Republican sources. They were able to back off. Once those memes were propagated within the Democratic Party, they took over. There was a joy in saying them. And I couldn't participate in that. I kept my mouth shut. I was not strident. I was not stereotypically feminist. I held my mouth shut and I bit my tongue. Because people have a right to feel good about Obama. And if they don't know how to do that without knocking her down, I can't stop them.
Well, see,
I've never been a Republican in my life. I never will be.
Right.
But I knew that this was so powerful that the emotion of despair was triggered in a lot of people, men and women. And despair is the worst emotion to have. It's the worst sin to have because it lets in all the others. So when someone tells me that they're voting for McCain because they're so hurt, I know that there's nobody telling them right now there's a better way, and they don't see one. It is suicide. But I can't stop them unless I can say, well, the Democratic Party has some chance of being reformed. It has some chance of being better. But I've talked to you before. You lay it out straight. There are not many chances left for us and the world to get our act together.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we do that when we spent months, which should have been in a healthy competition, months where people are not accusing one side of draining the pockets when the wonderful Edward Kennedy, now wonderful Edward Kennedy, was able to almost schism the party in 1980 because he insisted on having a say because he got that many votes against Jimmy Carter. Back then, it wasn't wonderful. Now it is. History changes perspective, and I'm afraid that when we look back at this campaign, Rush Limbaugh would not have needed an Operation Chaos. The money that McCain was able to save in having winner-take-all primaries and caucuses, they were able to stow away. And throughout the Internet, idiots were able to speak, paid idiots on both sides, being able to spew out hatred. And at the end of it, no one spoke up until it was too late.
Well, I hear what you're saying, Diane.
We can disagree. I understand that.
No, I hear what you're saying, and I've got a break here. But I can remember that kind of garbage talk about Hillary back in the 90s. And I fought tooth and nail against it and still would. The Clinton Chronicles, that filth that was put out by Jerry Falwell. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. About 8 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, Billy Foster, Ben Birch, the technical side of this program, Sharon Gordy, Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, Catherine Bay, the non-technical. Well, I guess you're technical side, aren't you, Gabby? Thanks to everybody. Appreciate it.
I walk the line.
You walk the line, you do. Trying to focus on what Diane had to say, it's a little bit difficult this late in the program, but as far as the attacks on Hillary, my attacks on Hillary were, and I don't have to justify them to anybody. They were legitimate. They had to do with her positions on certain key issues, and they had to do with the fact that the Clinton machine, and that's exactly what it is, just like there was a Daley machine, you know, there have been all kinds of political machines. The Clinton machine's goal was to make sure that the primary system that the Democrats were going to use was so front-loaded that it would guarantee Hillary Clinton's nomination, her securing of the nomination early on, so that the money the Democrats were raising could be used to help her fight whoever was going to be the Republican nominee. It didn't work because somebody called Barack Obama. It could have been Joe Smith. It could have been Hank Silverman. But somebody named Barack Obama who just didn't do what the Democratic Leadership Conference that owns the Democratic National Committee decided to do. And that was to front load all of the and to the point where states that didn't go along would lose their right to send delegates to the convention, i.e. Michigan and Florida. This was all clearly planned to guarantee the nomination of Hillary Clinton. So when I hear people talk about how Hillary Clinton was dissed or they talked about her fat ankles or whatever, no, I'm sorry. I'm not in that crowd. I spent the 90s defending the Clintons because they were being attacked with nonsense. Now, I didn't realize at the time during the 90s that what Bill Clinton was doing was setting up the collapse of the American working class. He didn't do it. He just made sure by signing the bills that the Republicans passed. I'm not saying, again, Clinton or Bush or no president can pass legislation. Okay? Okay. But once it's passed, it's up to the president to sign it or veto it. Bill Clinton signed so much destructive legislation in the 90s that was engineered by the Republican Party that it rendered the working class, the middle class of this country, right on the edge. So along comes George W. Bush and the Republicans and kicks our asses over. Now, when I talk about the past 16 years, I mean it. But as far as Hillary Clinton is concerned, the decision was made in the Democratic Party that nobody, nobody was going to get the nomination except her. That is not democracy. That is not fair, if I can use a word that doesn't fit anymore anywhere. But it wasn't. So when I hear Hillary supporters, and I'm not referring to Diane Boulder, I'm not referring to anybody specifically, but when I hear Hillary Clinton supporters whine and bitch and kvetch about, they didn't vote for her because she was a woman, give me a goddamn break. I am so sick of hearing that. I'm so tired of hearing it. When the Clinton campaign did everything that they possibly could with that stupid-ass Bill Clinton, yeah, he's become a stupid-ass now, to destroy Barack Obama's candidacy when Barack Obama's candidacy was the one that was being funded and financed to a certain percentage by an awful lot of so-called little people. So as far as making snarky comments on this program about her pantsuits, for Christ's sake, come on, lighten up. What political candidate or office holder hasn't been commented on about their haircut or their clothing? Jesus, here it is, the end of the program, and I'm pissed off again. As far as attacks on Hillary Clinton is concerned, look, this is all over now. We can fold our tents and go home. And whoever's going to vote Democratic this November, I hope you do it. Whoever's not, well, maybe you're waking up too. I don't know. I'll see you tomorrow night. I'm Mike Malloy. Excuse me. This is NovaM Radio. Take care. Keep it lit.